Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, September 16th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health, Saranac Lake, offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives, adirondackhealth.org. Joining us this afternoon for Medical Monday is Dr. Julie Morrison, the founder and director of HPA LiveWell. She's a psychologist who specializes in the treatment of eating disorders. We always get a lot of calls on a Medical Monday, so give us a call now and get in the queue. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. If you want, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison and your calls coming up on Medical Monday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA LiveWell. She is here to answer your questions about eating disorders. Dr. Morrison is a psychologist specializing in the treatment of adolescents and adults with eating disorders. She's the founder and director of HPA LiveWell in Albany. Prior to starting private practice, Dr. Morrison was the director of psychological services for the Northeast Comprehensive Care Center for Eating Disorders. She's a member of the American Psychological Association and maintains her faculty position as a psychologist at Albany Medical Center. If you have a question, great time to call us right now, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Tweet your questions if you wish at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Always on these Medical Mondays, I'm interested in finding out the path the doctors have taken to their specialty. What brought you to this specialization?
It's a good question. I went to graduate school in Buffalo, actually. And when I was there, I'll back up. When I was in undergrad, I wanted to do health psych. I actually worked at one of Paul Newman's camps for kids that are sick. And I decided I had to do health psych. I really liked the balance between medical and psych and really enjoyed working with that population. And when I was in graduate school, I did a lot of health psych related internships and things like that. But along the way, I made my way to Albany Med for my doctoral internship, and I had an opportunity to see a couple of patients that had eating disorders. And the reason I was pulled in there was because with disordered eating, it really is this multifaceted, both psychological, but also medical concerns. And so I could use sort of the background that I had to really be able to change behavior, but also really understand the medical. So I really enjoyed just working with that population. And I think the other thing is that I just was sort of gripped because working with these guys, it's a very difficult, they're difficult illnesses to treat, but the reward is so significant when they get better. So it was kind of an indirect path, but one that was fantastic for sure.
You mentioned that they're difficult to treat. What's your success rate?
We're actually, so in our practice, we run an intensive outpatient program. And in our practice, the way everybody evaluates progress or success in different ways, the way that we choose to evaluate progress is our ability to keep patients in their lives, keep them from needing to go into the hospital, needing to leave their homes and go away for treatment, things like that. And so over the course of the years that we've had our intensive program, so we started in 2013. Since then, our success rate every year is somewhere between 92 and 95%, actually, in keeping our patients out of a higher level of care.
It must be tough as outpatients keeping them on track.
It's very hard because there's a difference between outpatient and inpatient. Inpatient, it's sort of contrived. People, you know, they kind of get them through it. You know,
right.
Someone feeds you. Someone helps you make your decisions. But with outpatient, you have to show up. You have to say, look, I know something's up and I'm going to choose to, you know, get out of work early and go to treatment or not go over to that friend's house and show up for treatment today. And but the difference is with outpatient, what we found is while it's very difficult, the change seems to be more maintained than more of those contrived situations.
Because it's willful?
Because it's willful and because it's gradual over time. The other thing about it is that, you know, I had a patient say to me once, that she was realizing that you need to recover in the place you're going to live your recovered life. When you go off to treatment, it's not real. You know, they can try to challenge you, but when you really have to show up at school and still, you know, eat with your friends in the cafeteria and do things in real time, it's incredibly challenging, but real life.
Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest today of HPA Live Well. Our number is 800-348-2551. Eating disorders, the topic on our Medical Monday today. What is the rate of, and I know you probably can't put a finger on this, but the rate of the population afflicted with some sort of eating disorder?
So the statistics essentially are 1 in 5 females and 1 in 6 males will have an eating disorder in their lifetime. So it's pretty significant.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Is there a link between anorexia nervosa, bulimia, and obsessive compulsive disorder?
Yeah, absolutely. So, hi, Jim. So this is a really good question. So a lot of times, both anorexia and bulimia, as well as binge eating disorder, have comorbid psychiatric conditions. And, you know, I'd love to say that all we have to do is treat the disordered eating, but a lot of times there are other comorbid psychiatric illnesses. And the OCD diagnosis, obsessive compulsive disorder, absolutely is very connected to these diagnoses. There's other illnesses as well, such as depression and anxiety, as well as there's finding more and more links between eating disorders and ADHD, as well as some substance abuse disorders as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest today of HPA Live Well. Tell us about HPA Live Well.
HPA Live Well is a general private practice that we have here in Albany. But so one side of the practice essentially is geared towards treating pretty much every psychological concern for children all the way up through geriatric patients, really. We see people with depression, anxiety, OCD, all that stuff. And then on the other side of the practice essentially is our eating disorder program, which is an intensive outpatient program. We run 4 hours, 4 days a week. Multiple times a day, actually. We run it twice a day just to work with people's schedules.
These are group sessions?
They are. Our intensive treatment program is group-based. There is some individual components to it, but it's mostly group.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday. Dr. Julie Morrison is here from HPA Live Well. We talk eating disorders on the program today. If you have a question, give us a call. We'll be back. Vox Pop, Medical Monday, Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Eating disorders today, the topic. Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA Live Well is with us, and we jump over to Columbia County. And Nancy, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Being, you know, I was bulimic most of my 20s and, like, my 30s, and then I became vegan. I think I slowly phased out of it. Yes, I was in therapy and so forth. But I'm just curious because I found diet was a big aspect in my disease and that I actually have ulcerative colitis. So I'm just wondering, have there been studies that relate eating disorders to ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, diverticulitis? Is it, I've never really heard or discovered any. So I was curious if there's a correlation or if it becomes one. I mean, I know the, you know, ulcerative colitis and so forth is somewhat genetic, as it is, you know, in my family. So I was just curious if there's any studies or relations.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling and being so honest about what you've experienced in the past. I think that, you know, the jury's out a lot of times. You know, research is always being done in areas like this. I think one of the things that kind of gets my attention when you start talking about bulimia, a lot of times with these digestive related concerns people have, you know that with disordered eating, there can be medical side effects that as people consistently have disordered eating, especially something like bulimia, their digestive process can change over time. And so people do have trouble with things like slow gastric emptying. They have trouble with constipation. They have trouble with all sorts of other things. And so it seems reasonable that someone could have secondary medical problems after having a history of a disorder like that. You know, in terms of cause and effect, I'm not 100% sure. But it does make sense that you could have some GI discomfort, upset, or diagnosis after having a bulimia diagnosis in the past, for sure.
Yeah, because I was just curious. I've never, in my research, not that I'm, you know, in the profession, I don't know if there's ever been any studies that relate them.
You know what, and I can't tell you 100%, but I will tell you that every day, anecdotally from our patients, there are a lot of secondary medical concerns that people have, especially with bulimia. And something to consider, too, is when people struggle, as you know, I mean, some people struggle as a form of purging. They'll use laxatives and they'll abuse laxatives. The more someone's body continues to go through that kind of abuse, over time, there's fallout. There's medical fallout. And I think sometimes disorders like this can develop, for sure.
Yeah, I was just curious if that's kind of what happened to me. You know, I don't know. I mean, I always had, even as a child, it was always there. And I always had digestive issues and problems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could have been early onset bulimia. I don't know. So I was just curious as to any studies or relations, which I'm sure you see people maybe have that afterwards, or they come in that way.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the thing that we hang on to the most, and who knows, chicken or the egg, right, with something like this. But I think the important thing is to utilize these unfortunate symptoms as something that motivates behavior change on the other end, in the sense of certainly you don't want something like ulcerative colitis to get more uncomfortable or more symptomatic. And so the healthier you can be in terms of reducing symptoms of an eating disorder, the better off you are.
Nancy, thank you for the call. Our number here on Medical Monday is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest. Is, in general, the eating disorder issue related to society and body image and, you know, being told through every form of media, hey, you got to be thin. You got to look like this TV star, this movie star?
It's awful. Yeah. It is. We see a ton of it. You know, bullying is a huge thing. We also see a lot of comparison and competition. I mean, there's research, all sorts of research out there about social media now increasing rates of depression and anxiety, but definitely also affecting disordered eating. You know, people spend so much time on things on social media where they're basically going through someone's highlight reel, seeing all these things. And a lot of times there's that comparison. The other thing we'll see is people will look back through their own social media history, where they'll say, oh my gosh, look at me, I was 10 pounds thinner. Life must have been better back then. Let me get back to that. You know, social norms have been incredibly difficult for us to regulate eating. And it affects the way that we treat our patients, because it's fine for us to say, eat regularly, eat healthy, eat consistently, don't have these behaviors. But they'll say to us, if you ask someone on the street, a lot of these people struggle with poor body image, you know, poor self-esteem, you know, and it's almost normalized, unfortunately.
Was this a thing prior to TV, radio, movies, internet?
Yes. If you look back through history, you can look in the Victorian era where everybody's wearing these corsets and they're all cinched up. And there was that expectation of thinness. It's just, it's taken on a different role now.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest. It's Vox Pop Medical Monday. Patrick is in Sullivan County. Patrick.
Hi, Dr. Morrison. I was wondering, is there any link between people who have eating disorders and projecting their eating disorder onto their children?
Yeah. So, Patrick, hi. That's a really good question. You know, a lot of times we will see there is a relationship between we'll see kids and we will ask them, is anybody in your family struggling with disordered eating? We will see that. And the reason that what happens is our kids are paying attention all the time. I don't, you know about you, but I have two children. I have an almost 11-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son. And especially for my daughter, she watches everything I do. Right. And she's just now starting to say, well, what did you have for breakfast? What are you doing today? And what we don't recognize all the time is that they're watching everything, right? So we might be careful that we don't swear around our kids, but are we watching what else we're doing? And it's not just us, right? It's kids' teachers. You know, I don't know if you've ever brought a treat in for a birthday, but the teacher will, oftentimes a teacher will say, oh, but thank you, but I can't have that. I don't eat that. I can't, right? Or people will talk about after the holidays, I ate too many cookies. Kids are listening to that. They're listening all the time. And so I'm so glad you brought this question up, because one of the things we say to parents all the time is check yourself. What message are you sending to your kids about healthy, reasonable body image, both males and females?
Well, that was very insightful. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Patrick, thank you for the call. It's Medical Monday, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Eating disorders today is the topic. Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA Live Well is here. Off the last call, is there a genetic component to this?
There is. They're looking more and more to try to find that. We are finding that when you interview a patient and you ask them about their family history, we want to know whether or not they had anyone in their family, especially in their growing up years that they were around, that had active disordered eating. Because a lot of the question, like with any psychiatric illness, is, you know, nature versus nurture, right? There could be a component of nature, you know, that it could have a genetic piece, but also that nurture piece of what environment are they in? Are they in an environment that actually pulls from them disordered eating, asks them to restrict the food that they're eating, or what is the body image concerns that they might be around?
Well, it seems to me that society, regardless of what a, you could be the perfect parent of all time.
Sure.
Once that kid is out the door.
Yep.
Then what happens?
It's terrifying. You know, I mean, no one wants their kid in the whole time, right?
Right.
But
no.
But then again, you're a little afraid of where you send them. You know, what does happen outside the door? And then the other problem is what happens even when they're in the door but they're on their phones? It's constant. And they're bombarded all the time, because when you're a kid and you're around your friends, well, the friends had influence, right? So, you know, the kids will go to lunch and it's, well, what are you having for lunch? Well, my mom says I can't have sugar because sugar is bad for me. Wait, my mom said that sugar was fine. Wait, maybe I shouldn't have sugar. Or they go to health class, the best intended health class, right? And teachers are talking about weight, shape, and size concerns. And they're talking about healthy eating. And you've got these kids that have underdeveloped brains because they're kids and they're not, you know, adults yet. And they can't process all this information. And they're making meaning out of, you should do this and you shouldn't do that. This black and white kind of thinking. And they get pretty jammed up.
Well, how do you break that?
You got to talk about it. You got to talk about it. And kids have to be willing to share. So as parents, we have to be open to have the conversation, and we have to demonstrate the behavior we want to see from them. You know, it's one thing to be a parent and say to your child, love your body and, you know, eat regularly, and then be that mom that's sitting there and not having their hamburger on a roll and they're, you know, talking about how they can't have dessert. We have to sort of practice what we preach when we're around our kids.
Are you suggesting then it's better if kids have fat parents?
No.
Okay.
I'm considering that parents need to suggest and maintain the theory that everyone is built the way they're supposed to be built. You know, we like to tell people that we are all born with a blueprint, and all houses look different, right? Every blueprint is different, and you're the way you're supposed to be. If you're eating regularly, eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, you know, we call it eating like a two-year-old, right? Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full, then your body's going to be whatever way it's supposed to be.
Okay, it's easy for parents, and we're both parents, to say these things.
Sure.
However, getting it through a youngster's head is another thing. And I assume in your practice at HPA Live Well, you are engaged in breaking some of these habits. And it's got to be enormously difficult at times.
It's enormously difficult, absolutely. And one of the things that is required, especially if kids are the patient, you have to involve the parents. You have to involve the family, because that's their system that they're part of, for sure. And the system has to be willing to also break their habits that are unhealthy. And so it's quite a bit of work.
Julie Morrison is our guest of HPA Live Well Eating Disorders today on this Medical Monday. 800-348-2551, the number. Sue in Ballston Spa. Hello, Sue.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm calling about my sons. I guess I'll let me just share some quick things with you. My youngest son had a heart transplant at 13. He's 23 now. And 3 years later, my husband died. My husband was morbidly obese. We'd gone to nutritionists and stuff like that, and he'd just like, wasn't going to do that. I'm not overweight, maybe a little overweight, but I've never been obese. But he was unable, not holding it against him. He didn't go to doctors, and we always thought he wouldn't go to the doctor until he lost enough weight to go to a doctor and not be told he was overweight. This is my husband.
Mm-hmm.
After my husband passed away, both my sons gained within a year or two 100 pounds each. They've both been struggling with it. I've struggled. Talked to him a lot about it. I told him it's okay to feel hungry because it felt like to me that they were filling in their empty spots of emotional spots with food. And they're both, thank goodness, losing weight, but they've got a lot of weight to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And especially my younger son who's got, had the heart transplant. He's got blood pressure issues and stuff like that. So the doctors suggested we go to bariatric surgeons, not to go get the bariatric surgery, which he really shouldn't get, but just to go through their programs. And we really haven't found some place that was helpful. And I know he's trying to do it on his own. He's really, really working hard. Both of them are. My older son's actually lost 50 pounds in the last year. My younger son's lost some weight.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a
We lost you there. Do you have a question, Sue?
Yeah, so what do you suggest? How do you proceed? What does one do to help someone to get into a place where they can lose this weight?
Right.
Because it's so difficult.
So it's not just, in my opinion, it's not just about losing weight. It's about managing the reason that they gained it in the first place, right? It sounds like maybe they struggled for a little bit of time, but there's a lot of grief there, and a response. All of us cope the best way that we can. And some are really healthy coping skills, and some of them are terrible. And they make us more stuck than we were in the first place. And it sounds to me, usually in the face of a lot of stress, we're always at our worst. And it sounds to me like they used food in order to feel better. And our goal is to teach them that they have other skills. And it's not just about weight loss. Weight loss comes when you have binge eating disorder or you struggle with overeating. Weight loss will come if you can start coping with the things that stress you in a way that doesn't require food. And that's the goal, not just the weight loss.
Sue, thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today, eating disorders with Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA Live Well. Let's go to Eliza in East Hampton. Eliza, you're on.
Hi there. I'm just a little concerned that your guest is painting parents and teachers who, for instance, might be talking to kids about not eating a lot of sugar, not eating a lot of carbs, all these things that not eating a lot of prepared foods. These are things that are leading in our whole society to people, many more people having diabetes and obesity than, there were 40 years ago before the whole dietary thing in our country changed.
Eliza, so I have to tell you, I get you. Yep. Your point is a really good one. And I want to thank you so much for saying that.
Thank you.
No, let me just say, and Eliza, you're pointing out where we get kind of jammed up. So one of the things that it can be so difficult, because you're right, there is a problem with obesity, and there is a problem, just like you were talking about, diabetes and things like that. When we as a culture sort of have to sort of manage our response and our reaction to food, when I'm talking about sending the right message, what I'm talking about is sort of this general idea of health. You know, I'll say to someone, you can't just have sugar. You can't just have this. You can't just have carrots. You can't just have peanut butter, right? We want it. We have to keep things balanced. And you're 100% right that sometimes just saying, yep, go ahead, have all of that, have whatever you want, can lead people down a really rotten road. My message really, really is around parents modeling good balance. So like I said, I really appreciate you saying that for sure.
All right, Eliza, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest today. Nia in Del Mar. Nia, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Unfortunately, I missed the beginning of the show, but I came on, I heard the voice, and I was like, wow, this sounds like the clinical director at LiveWell. But I'm actually a former client. I know that's like, well, I think that's the normal amount of information, but... I guess I could rave for a long time about this program. I think it was incredible for me and for a lot of the people with whom I went to treatment. But I would like to pose a question. Maybe you could give the listeners an idea of what DBT is.
Sure.
And kind of give them a blueprint for how you approach that kind of cognitive therapy.
Absolutely.
And thank
BBT?
You for everything.
You're welcome. So listen, so DBT is what she's talking about. So dialectical behavior therapy. So one of the types of treatment, it comes out of CBT. So CBT is cognitive behavior therapy, and DBT kind of came along with that. And DBT has these main pillars of treatment that we look at. We look at distress tolerance. We look at interpersonal effectiveness, mindfulness, and emotion regulation. And essentially the reason we want to do DBT skills or coping skills basically that we're teaching is that we're trying to replace the disordered eating as the coping skill with something healthy. So what happens is over time, these eating disorders have purpose, right? And so if I say to you, you got to stop that thing that you've been doing to cope with life. Oh, but wait, I'm not going to teach you any skills
right.
to replace it. You're just going to have to now do life without it.
Go gamble instead or something.
There you go,
right?
Right? So we're going to go down a bad road. So what she's talking about is these DBT skills really allow people who have disordered eating to substitute out those symptoms with healthy, reasonable skills. Would you say that that makes sense based on what I'm saying?
Mia?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely makes sense. Yeah, I wanted to give a question that, I don't know, that puts it in words for people to understand a little bit better. Sometimes I would talk to my mom and it would be hard for her to understand, but yeah, it's nice to have it broken down so that you can see kind of how you treat these things.
And I
thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Quantify and even qualify mindfulness.
Sure.
How do you... In the dialectical approach, mm-hmm. how does one say, oh, well, you've got enough mindfulness now?
Well, so one of the things we want people to be able to do is sit in a non-judgmental way and have an experience. It is super hard.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I even have trouble running some of the mindfulness groups because as we're telling people to quiet their minds and notice what they're feeling, I'm sitting there going, okay, so after this, I have to go to the bank and then I have to go here. And
right.
Because it's hard to turn your head off. But the theory essentially is that we have to be able to really be in an experience and be in it in a non-judgmental way in order to really sort of appreciate it. And the idea is it doesn't have to be a good experience to sit in it non-judgmentally. It's okay to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to allow your brain and allow your body to sit still in that.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is here. We talk eating disorders. Julie from HPA Live Well. We'll take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Back for the home stretch coming up. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday. Ray Graff here at 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA Live Well is with us. Before we get back to the home stretch of calls here,
just take us through, you had mentioned you do group sessions on the other side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
Take us through a typical session. How many people are there and then what do you do?
Yeah. So our program runs 4 hours each day, right? So
that's a long time.
It is. So no one wants to sit and listen to me for 4 hours. People are probably barely getting through the last 38 minutes.
I don't know. It's been a pretty solid.
It's all right. All right.
Yeah, you're all right.
So what we do is a lot of times we will do one group, which will be about an hour and a half-ish. And then we have a meal, which is about 45 minutes. There's some breaks in there. And then we do another hour and a half and change. So what happens is we try to cycle through a couple different clinicians, keep things fresh, but we go through different topics. So, for example, today in our group, we have our dietitian running our nutrition group. Then she does a challenge meal, which is where we order the food and bring it in so people don't know what's coming. It's in front of them and they have to be able to consume the meal based on their meal plan. And then say the next group is a psychotherapy group, which is solution focused, but an opportunity to talk about things that are going on. Whereas tomorrow, we're more CBT focused, that cognitive behavior therapy I was talking about before. So we break it up.
As opposed to DBT.
Exactly.
Right.
But then DBT is on Thursday.
Okay.
Right? So we move stuff, different topics for different groups throughout the week.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest. Marianne in Albany. Hello, Marianne.
Hi, how are you? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is, I'm wondering if the doctor has ever seen a person who has really struggled with disordered eating, and then eventually they actually have difficulty losing weight because of their metabolism being so messed up.
Well, I think that—hi, thanks for calling. I think it's important to recognize that disordered eating does damage, right? And so the side effects or the long-term effects of having disordered eating for a while can be varied. And for sure, there are medical consequences to that. In terms of metabolism, specifically, we have seen people struggle to have their weight look different depending on, different behaviors that they've had. Sometimes it has to do with, they started their disordered eating earlier, and then as they've gotten older, the metabolism has changed. It really kind of depends. It also can be dependent on medication they've taken, things like that. But metabolism shifts over time. And with disordered eating, that's just one more variable.
Marianne, thank you very much for the call. It's Medical Monday today, 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest. Gail in Oppenheim. Gail, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think there's a medical term now for people who become obsessed with healthy eating, and they take it to an extreme. It turns into like an element of like obsessive compulsive and control. How often do you find that affects eating disorders, this need for control?
So, Gail, I think what you're talking about is this idea of orthorexia, which is...
That's the word.
Is that it? I got it? All right, good. So, essentially, this is people are so obsessed, as you say, I have air quotes, but you can't see them, obsessed with healthy eating. And what ends up happening is, in terms of setting aside the word OCD or the words, obsessive compulsive disorder for
Control.
A second,
yeah.
The biggest thing is that it is okay and wonderful to eat healthy. What we want people to do is eat flexibly, because that's real life, right? You go to a party and you may not have the foods you're used to eating sitting there on the table. Your job is to be able to still be a social, engaged person. And so you need to be able to find something on that table that you can eat and satisfy you. So we're looking for flexibility. It's good to want to be healthy, but it's also incredibly important to be flexible. And that's really, really important.
Gail, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Every time we have a psychiatrist or psychologist on the program, I'm always interested. You ever get depressed from just what you do?
I have to say no.
Really?
In graduate school, we spend quite a bit of time with a lot of supervision, knowing where we end and someone else begins.
Mm.
And if you had a therapist you met with all the time, if you worried that they went home and they were depressed and sad, how much would that help you? It wouldn't, right? So we have to make sure that our closets are pretty clean so that we're able to, like I said, know where we end and someone else begins.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Julie Morrison, our guest, Dr. Morrison with HPA LiveWell. Barbara in Schenectady. Barbara.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if you could comment a little further on what you know about the link between ADHD and eating disorders, and in particular, if it changes the treatment approach.
Hi. Yeah, absolutely. So with attention deficit disorder, if you think about that impulse control, right, this drive, this I can't stop, I have to do this one thing, and you think about disordered eating, you think about binging, you think about purging, that same drive is there. And so what we're finding is that we need to help people interrupt impulse. And if you look at treatment, what we want to do as a whole is help everybody sort of have a little bit of think time before they engage in any kind of behavior. So that's really, you know, from a treatment perspective, we look at that. What you can notice just from a medical perspective is that some of our binge eating disorder, people who struggle with binge eating disorder, one of the medications that's being used now is Vyvanse. And Vyvanse is an attention deficit disorder medication. And so people are finding that the reason that's helpful is because it helps to control that impulse. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, off topic slightly, but is ADHD over-diagnosed?
ADHD should be diagnosed with formal testing. And if it's not,
what I mean is, are there too many people being counted as ADHD?
If they are tested in the appropriate way with the right battery of tests, then no.
Doctors are always so diplomatic. I can never get a good solid.
I'm running for office.
I think you're doing all right. This email came in from Erica. Erica wants to know if there is an established connection between attachment and bonding, or disruptions thereof, and disordered eating.
In particular, you know, I think that there are some clinicians that are researching and looking into things like that. I think at the end of the day, when you look at infants, we want infants to learn healthy attachment. And one of the ways is, I cry, you feed me. I know I'm safe. And so our attachment affects the way that we develop as people throughout our lives in all different ways. And so what I would say to that is an unhealthy attachment can create all sorts of distress as someone grows older.
Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday today, and we talk eating disorders with Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA LiveWell. Bill is in Utica. Bill, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Morrison.
Sure.
I am a coach, and I coach both men and women. And one of my athletes, female, just starting in June, began developing migraine headaches. She's very thin, not overly thin. I think she's eating right, but I can't tell. We monitored her diet. She appears to be eating the right amount. Could migraine headaches be a side effect of eating, of an eating disorder?
I think that generally speaking, when it comes to migraines or headaches, a lot of times we would see that if somebody is struggling with dehydration. You can also look at, you know, pain just in general as a form of discomfort, which usually can indicate some level of stress. But generally speaking, we wouldn't assume that because someone's having migraines that they are having disordered eating as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Sure,
Bill,
thanks.
Thanks a lot. And always nice to hear from Utica. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. In your practice, do you ever have anybody who just walks in thinking they have an eating disorder and you say, no, you really don't?
Yeah, sometimes. I think more often it's the degree to which they're struggling. So we'll see parents and they'll bring their kids in and they'll be, you know, really, really nervous and worked up, and they'll think they need intensive treatment. And we'll say, you know what, actually, let's take it down a notch. Let's give this a try first. Sometimes we'll see someone have weight loss secondary to something like depression,
right,
or anxiety. That's more of what we see when it's not an eating disorder, but it's more disordered eating as a symptom.
Yeah.
And so with something like that, we really try to attack the mood disorder component and see if the weight improves over time. The other thing we can do is see weight can shift because of stress.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'll get an adolescent who breaks up with their first partner and, you know, they've lost 5 pounds in 2 weeks. And then once they've had some support around that, weight goes back up.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison is our guest. How long do you usually treat a patient, whether in group session or one-on-one?
It's so varied, and it's the question that a lot of people ask before they start treatment. You know, how long? What's my length of stay?
Yeah.
And it really is dependent on a couple of things. One is motivation for change. That's the first one. You know, do you really want to make some change here? And are you ready to get going?
I mean, if there's a motivation for change and it's strong enough, why does the person need you?
It's a good question. A lot of times, well, a couple of things. Go back to the call about coping skills and DBT, right? It's one thing to want to get better. It's another thing to know how. It's also another thing to hold yourself accountable as well.
Dr. Julie Morrison, our guest, and back to the phones. Jerry in Clifton Park. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you're on.
Good. I just wanted to comment, the coach that just called from Utica. I have two daughters that were D1 runners in both high school and college, and as well have a husband who's a coach of high school world. I also have a sister who had an eating disorder growing up. I'm actually so shocked by how prevalent eating disorders are with competitive runners. My daughters are both okay. One of them had a little bit of a struggle, but a little bit of an issue at her sophomore year, but kind of got on track. But so many of her friends have had eating disorders, and I'm wondering if if Julie can talk about what she's seen with competitive athletes and especially competitive runners and what her experience is there.
Absolutely. Such an important question. So we see a lot with sports. And running is an interesting one. We also see it with, you know, dance, gymnastics, some other stuff too. But when you look at running, the hard part is that people believe, and unfortunately, sometimes coaches will suggest, not with intent to harm by any stretch, but will intend that if you are thinner, you will run faster. When it comes to running, you have no other skill other than your actual is running. There's no ball, there's no net, there's no nothing, right? And so it's all about you and your endurance and getting there. And so it's also incredibly competitive. So what happens is, you know, someone, it's not only competitive with the guy you're running next to, but it's also competitive for your own self, you know, getting a PR and making sure that this was your best time. And so if somebody tells you, if you weigh less, you will be faster, there's actually a way for you to measure that and find out whether or not that's true. And so this competition within yourself, competition among others, really fosters a lot of that. And so we see it a lot of times with running, unfortunately. And like I said, we see it with dance, we see it with gymnastics. You can really see it anywhere.
Super. So yeah, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Jerry. We appreciate the call. We only have a few moments left, but if you want to jump in here, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA Live Well is here. We mentioned media and society and radio and TV and movies and now internet. In the years you have been doing this, are the rates of eating disorders increasing in the society?
I think the one thing that we're seeing is they're younger.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. You know, I mean, the statistics continue to be at 1 in 5 females and 1 in 6 males. But at the same time, we're hearing about younger and younger kids being afflicted with this. And I think that, you know, people are also coming for treatment more, though, too. So, you know, maybe we're also learning about it more.
Are parents more or people being more attuned to the situation?
I think people are just more ready to seek mental health services in general. It's less and less private. You know, it's less and less concerning that someone's going to know I'm getting therapy.
Less kind stigma. Of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
The number here is 800-348-2551. And I believe, I want to try this here. I think, is line one ready to go? Yeah? No. We'll go to line two. Who's calling?
This is Kim.
Hi, Kim. You're on.
Oh, hi, Ray. I was wondering, as a mother who went through this with a son who was 10 at the time, what is the first step that parents can do? Because we had a heck of a time. He was only 10. He was male. There weren't a whole lot of resources. We ended up, by hook or by crook, getting the proper help that we needed, but it was extremely difficult.
It's really hard. And unfortunately, the younger, the more difficult to find the right placement. And your experience is very real. There are resources. Really, the first thing is for a parent, if you have a concern about your child, you should go to your pediatrician first and foremost to make sure that medically they are stable enough to be outpatient, making sure that everything physically is okay. And then the next step really is to try to find a specialist that, you know, somebody who specializes in disordered eating that can at least do an evaluation or an assessment to help you start moving in the right direction.
I just want to make a suggestion because
Absolutely.
We did go to the pediatrician. We've been before. I was, you know, pregnant and wonderful, lovely. He was so overwhelmed and really had no idea of where to direct us.
Yep.
But again, we worked it through. The thought that I was going to give other parents is that we were unable to find anyone who would treat someone who was 10 and again, male. But his therapist, I did get him a therapist, but they suggested that the parents go to an eating specialist and get some strategies for us as a family, which I thought was extremely helpful.
Well, it's so helpful. Absolutely.
Go ahead.
It's just really helpful to do that because when a kid is that young, it really is left sort of to the parents at home to refeed their child. And one of the things, it's so funny, right? Because as parents, we're just always trying to feed our kids and take care of them. But you almost forget how when they're struggling with disordered eating. So getting that kind of support is incredibly smart.
We only have a minute left here or so, but let's go to Kathleen in Boston Spa. Kathleen.
Hi. I'll try to be quick, okay. But my mother is 69 years old, and she's been in put into inpatient treatment for anorexia twice over the past 2 years with, you know, some success when she comes out. But what always strikes me is when we go out to eat, she's able to eat perfectly fine. And it's just it always seems a little odd to us that it's only something that manifests when she's by herself versus, you know, being taken care of. She can be fine. And I don't know if that makes any sense or kind of the rationale behind that.
It does. I think that one of the things we recognize is that the presentation of someone's disordered eating is varied. So, you know, for her, if she can eat out but she can't eat alone, that's saying something to you that of some sort of resource she needs. What kind of support does she need? What can you guys put in place there? So it's a good question, but it really does show just the uniqueness of each disorder.
Well, Dr. Julie Morrison, you made it through the whole show.
I did.
Yeah.
It's great.
Did you have fun?
I did.
Well done. Thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Thanks again to Dr. Julie Morrison of HPA LiveWell for joining us today. Again, thank you for listening. Terrific calls. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White took the phone calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Well, thanks for joining us today on Medical Monday. We'll shift gears, quite literally. Tomorrow, Gordon Fricke will join us to answer your automotive repair questions. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.